From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, Emily and I will be sharing what we've learned about optimizing site speed and stability using two client case studies to give you real-world context. I'm your host, Leia Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by Mithra 62's Backup Pro, a complete backup solution for WordPress, Expression Engine 2 and 3, Craft, PrestShop, and Concrete 5. We use this one ourselves for some of our client sites. It's insanely customizable and includes automated backup integrity, 8 built-in storage locations, console routing. Basically, Backup Pro is built to make disaster recovery as painless as possible. Just visit backup-pro.com to get started.
We were originally going to talk to Stephanie Morillo today, but she's under the weather, so we rescheduled her for September, and today will just be another episode with me and Leia.
Hi.
We're going to talk about website performance.
Yep. This was actually on our schedule anyway, because over the past 18 months, we've seen a big increase in our clients' interest in and concern about the speed of their websites, especially on mobile.
Yes.
And when you're dealing with websites that rely on CMSs, content management systems, it's a lot more complicated than just the size of images or fonts or the order of your JavaScript, that kind of stuff.
All right, so then let's define our topic. What is performance?
It's interesting because we actually had to answer this ourselves recently. The term performance can encompass so many things, but for this particular discussion, I think the simplest way to explain it is it's how fast your site loads on your screen.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the easier benchmarks for everyone, including clients who don't know a whole lot about the technology behind the scenes, to connect with, because they know what it feels like when the site's loading slow. But I also think it's worth noting that performance can also include how stable your site is, your uptime.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's talk about those two aspects. What is speed?
So when we're talking about speed, it can actually be a mix of things. We kind of hinted at it in the intro there. It's how long it takes for the text of a page to load, and that's relative to the images, which is relative to the CSS and scripts, and that's relative to the software running like a CMS. But a site visitor just perceives this all at once as page loading on their screen. But for us web devs, we need to take every single point that I just mentioned apart.
To identify where the bottleneck might be.
Exactly, exactly.
But for a user, they're just like, the page is slow.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about stability. What's that?
So stability is really how reliable each of those site pillars I just mentioned are. So when one of them breaks, like a third-party script, a fast site otherwise can be brought to a complete crash or halt. Stability for most web devs, I think, tends to point towards server and its configuration and hosting, as well as the CMS the site was built on. Like, how can it handle increased page views and some marketing initiative that brought a ton of traffic?
All right, so speed and stability, especially like when we're talking to a client, I think it's important to note that these aren't really fixed measure points.
No, no. Because speed and stability can vary based on a variety of factors, but many of them can really be isolated toward simultaneous site visitors. So if you had a marketing initiative, brought a ton of traffic, that's different compared to site visitors that are there on a regular basis. So even an inefficient site can be fast if there aren't very many visitors, right?
Right. And so with that kind of premise in mind, so a client can be chugging along happy as punch that with their site, and then some event happens in terms of attracting visitors on their site and it crashes, and it's nothing that anyone foresaw or could have anticipated for because it was doing fine. So it was almost, you notice there's a problem when you have a problem, not necessarily something you could technically mitigate for 100%.
Right. And it also changes depending on the volume in regards to that. Because say the first time that happens, you try to fix it and you think, okay, that's great. But let's say you've got 10 times more the following year. Whatever you did to fix, say, 2 times more is different from 10 times more.
Exactly. And then you can't even control some of the factors like you mentioned if you're using a script from a third-party service. Mm-hmm. Let's say something that we see a lot that I feel like we're going to talk about a lot today, but like those tracking scripts that marketing departments want to add to websites for campaigns or, you know, whatever they're tracking. Right. If one of those is failing, that can trigger a 404 that you don't actually see that is happening behind the scenes that can send your site, take it down entirely.
Right. Or it doesn't necessarily take it completely down in the way that you get a pingdom alert, because usually pingdom gives you an idea that your hosting server is down. Mm. But it's so hard to tell that it's the hosting versus the third-party script, because sometimes when that fails, it just stalls the site so slow, so it looks like it's loading. And then it doesn't completely finish. And then so that's another way that speed can be shown, where like something's failing, but like, what is it? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. All the client sees is that their site isn't working during a critical time. And so what we're hoping to share today is the stuff we've figured out that will hopefully help you, because what sort of prompted our focus on performance, you know, aside from the fact that we really are seeing this come up across all of our clients, but we had a client, their site went down. It's one of the clients that we're going to talk about today, but during a critical marketing campaign. And it sort of prompted us to take a really focused look at how we approach monitoring performance. Mm-hmm. So before we get into some of that, though, do you think there's anything else that should be considered part of performance?
Definitely. So there's ease of future maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
Once things are a lot more stable, then you don't have to be scrambling so much.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be just easier for admins as well as, you know, vendors such as us to find issues or just generally maintain the site.
I also think that part of that maintenance is also keeping a system upgraded. That makes it easier for future maintenance, and that makes it easier for the client. I think something that isn't talked a lot about, at least in our industry, about performance is sort of, you know, your client staff, the stuff that is the qualitative experience of dealing with their site. And if it's hard to manage the CMS, if it's hard to manage on the server, that's also part of performance. It all contributes to their perception of it's not working for them. And so to a degree, that is also a part of our discussion with our clients, because it isn't just about how the site is handling on the front end, in the browser or on the phone. It's also about how they have to maintain it and the quality of their life and how long or how painful it takes them to do something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm thinking about our one particular client where the bulk of the work of maintenance is on one person. And so not only do we have to fix the site, mm-hmm. we have to make sure that our fix doesn't add further headaches mm-hmm. to the staff. So there has to be discussions in regards to the workflow that works.
Yeah.
Because maybe there's something that could fix things fast, or it's like even the better solution. But if you only have one staff mm-hmm. and you don't have the resources to babysit the site, then you might need to make a compromise over the particular solution so that it's actually practical and workable mm-hmm. for that particular client.
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, we're going to talk about two client projects today. They're both Expression Engine clients, and so they have common issues related to their CMS, but also very unique in terms of everything from how their staff works to how we tackled performance for each one of them, and in terms of the problems that we found on their sites. And I think just these two clients really illustrate that performance work is really custom work.
Right.
I don't think there's some, oh, buy our 10-point checklist package and we'll fix your site. It's just not that simple. There may be three things you could do to pretty much every site, but whether those three things have a huge impact on that site's performance, you may not really be helping if, you know, you're only attacking those common three things and not finding out what the unique custom issues are for a certain site.
Absolutely.
So generally speaking, we tackle all of our performance work from two angles, front end and the CMS back end.
Yes.
Leah, you've done the bulk of our back end work. Can you talk briefly about how you assess the performance of the EECMS, the approach you take, tools, documentation?
Sure. So first, let's talk about what's already built in, the internal tools. Mm-hmm. While we're talking about Expression Engine, all CMSs have some sort of debugging tool built in. Mm-hmm. Usually they're available in some sort of developer mode or logged in only type of situation. In our particular client's cases, they're both in Expression Engine 2, and there's the Display Output Profiler and Display Template Debugging, which are really crucial to figuring out where the bottlenecks are. So the output profiler is the overall view of the page because it gives you the benchmark times like total execution. And a really great number is the overall number of queries as well as the memory usage, like how much it takes for the machine to actually build the page using memory.
Can I ask you why the overall number of queries is a good number?
Because really, what you're trying to do whenever you're building a CMS is for it to display content without having it to hit the database too much. Mm-hmm. And a query means it's hitting that database. Mm-hmm. So one query is it talks to the database once, twice, et cetera, and so forth. So the more queries is the more times it talks to the database. And a database query takes a lot more time than, say, you know, just loading a .txt text file. Mm-hmm. Because there's no database review and trying to trickle down through different tables, et cetera, and so forth.
Okay.
So the amount of queries is really important because it's kind of a multiplier.
The more you have, the potentially slower your page is going to be.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And the other important thing that Expression Engine has is the display template debugging. So once you've got the overall view and you're trying to figure out the actual problem within the page, it allows you to drill down to specifics of the page load. So we talked about, okay, total number of queries. Now the template debugging tells you exactly what queries are the issue since it drills down how long each specific query takes to load and how many times a particular query is being asked, specifically, say, a particular add-on might be called several times.
Okay.
But before we even view those outputs, you kind of have to narrow down.
Right.
What pages to review.
Right. Sites are hundreds, thousands of pages.
Right.
You can't just go to each page and look at the numbers.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I suppose you could, but that would be a crazy budget.
Yeah. And it's really, not only is it not practical, it doesn't really make sense because most CMSs, let's say one page is being rendered through one template.
Right.
And that applies to multiple pages.
Right.
So in many ways, like when you're narrowing things down, let's say there's two slow pages, but if they're using the same template, you're actually fixing more than just those two pages or that one page.
Right. So a change to a template could affect 50 pages on the site.
Or more. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So in order to narrow down that page, that's kind of like an art and a science, mm-hmm. right? And you know how you were talking about how every client is custom because every site is different, et cetera, and so forth. So for one particular client, we had to go into their Google Analytics and we narrowed down their most popular pages and Google Analytics showed their load times. Mm-hmm. So we then just created a spreadsheet that broke down what pages we thought were important based on the prominence and the slow load time.
Right.
Then we spoke to the client to kind of cross-reference these findings, to verify them, and to take into account their anecdotal preferences. Because usually they come to us with the anecdotal preferences already. They're
right.
Like, I think this page is slow.
Right. For this client, it was the home page. That was the one they noticed all the time.
Right. Right. But sometimes there's an important page of the site that wasn't on their radar until we reviewed their analytics. And other times they really want to work on promoting a particular part of their site that may not have bubbled up in the analytics, let's say, but it's important to them because that template runs through pages that affect multiple parts of the site. So maybe the one particular page didn't show up, but something lower on that list could actually affect most of the site. So it has a larger impact to fix.
Right. We did something different, though, with the other client project that we're talking mm-hmm. about. So the one you were just talking about, that was a unique approach where they wanted a dedicated focus on their performance. They saw a bad, slow homepage, and they wanted us to fix it. And so that's where we started from, to identify the pages to review. But for the other project, mm-hmm. it wasn't like that. It was yeah. more along the lines of that crash situation.
Right. Well, the other one was an emergency.
Exactly. They didn't even notice. I think they were kind of okay with some pages running slow right. until it crashed their site.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about that particular client and how we picked the pages to focus on for performance improvements.
Okay. So for this other project, we were able to configure and install this amazing service called New Relic, which the other client couldn't install because it was a weird configuration of IIS and PHP, which is incompatible with New Relic.
Which we found out after we were counting on it. So make note, if you're working with IIS, don't count on New Relic at this point in time.
Right. Unless you've got a Windows-specific website, but if it's like kind of a mix of technologies, IIS and PHP, so it wasn't able to deal with that. But if you ever have to do any emergency review of speed issues, I highly recommend this service because it essentially finds slowdowns almost immediately. Mm-hmm. Once you've set it up, the long and short of it is it will uncover the most problematic pages based on errors and load times based on the application itself. Mm-hmm. So Expression Engine. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a typical webpagetest.org test. New Relic has access to the database and system calls to really narrow down the bottleneck inside Expression Engine down to the specific query. Mm-hmm. Now, unlike the other client, we didn't have a spreadsheet of specific pages because this was an emergency situation mm-hmm. to target for this particular client. So instead, we used New Relic to find the bottlenecks. Mm-hmm. And because of this particular situation, there was a lot more client collaboration. So using New Relic, we notify them when we notice a particular bottleneck, we get approval to work on it, and then they notify us of upcoming campaigns. So then we tackle those as a first come, first serve kind of mm-hmm. basis. And then we monitor progress on specific dates and times that they tell us a campaign is having. For documentation, though, for this particular client, we do have a running list of cached templates and any of the upcoming campaigns and specific pages affected by that campaign.
Right. So it's definitely a more ongoing thing versus the other client we were talking about where we identified some key pages in collaboration with them and we just tackled those pages. Right. This one, we're kind of monitoring at all times, and 1 week, we don't see any issues. The next week they have a new campaign and then we're going to focus on that page. And it's a moving target, I suppose is the best way to put it. But it's not chaotic. It's very planned.
Right, right. And I think the difference is where each client was in their, I guess, like project lifecycle or their site, you know, readiness. Like with one client, they weren't necessarily, there was no emergency situation. It was just like a long-term slowness situation mm-hmm. that they just didn't have the resources previously to address.
Absolutely. I think it's also worth mentioning, you know, not only are they in different places with their project lifestyle, but their sites were so different. The client for which we're doing the ongoing monitoring and sort of responding very quickly to, you know, needs as they show up each week, their site has been, it definitely needs to be looked at. It's kind of more band-aided than anything else.
Right.
Because of ongoing staff turnover on their end.
Right.
And with different staff come different needs for different workflows. And there never seems to be the full budget to attack it holistically. So we've been addressing things as they come up. Whereas the other system wasn't in that sort of state. It was in all updated. Everything is, you know, working together in line. We had worked on a previous website with them. They're on a multiple site manager EE install. So their environment was just a lot more well integrated as opposed to more bolt-on-ish, I guess is the best way to put it.
Right, Right. Because one client generally had one particular developer working on it for several years, mm-hmm. and the other client had multiple developers touching it. So mm-hmm. it was a lot harder to discern what any of the issues were. So New Relic was really, really important figuring that out. And by the way, we do have an episode focused on New Relic. Mm-hmm. So I won't go into like details, specifics about that. But between Google Analytics and New Relic and having thorough discussions with your client, you should be able to narrow down, you know, exactly what's going on and what you need to test to have the largest impact.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to talk again a little bit about some of the documentation. Once you have all these tools, it made sense for us, at least with one particular client, we create a spreadsheet outlining all the output profiler details, mm-hmm. template debugger details, and Google Analytics details per page to have a clear before look.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk a lot more later in this episode about why that's important, but I just wanted to point out like those were the types of things that we made sure that we documented early on.
Absolutely. And, you know, just mention, Leah, if you don't mind, for the other client, where we're doing the ongoing work, you do still provide documentation and track specific statistics.
Yeah, except instead of Google Analytics and output profiler stuff, it's the graphs and numbers from New Relic.
Mm-hmm.
So week by week, we kind of do kind of a bullet point list of here's what we did this week, here's the impact, why was there a performance issue here because of this, et cetera, and so forth.
Yep.
So we've been talking a little bit about Expression Engine, but as we mentioned, that's not just the only pillar of a site speed. Mm-hmm. We also have a lot of front-end stuff to think about. So Em, you do the bulk of that particular work. What do you do to evaluate front-end assets?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, at least in my experience, this is the easier aspect of performance sure. work. It's also the aspect I think is probably the best documented on the web. Like,
yes.
if you're going to look up a web performance article, they're probably going to talk pretty much all about the front end.
Sure.
So there's a lot of information out there to help you figure out solutions to this stuff. The other thing that makes front end performance optimization easier is that to a large degree, it tends to be global. So
right.
even though, as Leah was describing for the Expression Engine performance testing, you have to identify specific pages to look at, I certainly use those as the ones I test, but most of the time, the front end assets are being called globally. So the findings I might discover for one page will probably affect all the other pages we've identified as well as
right.
the rest of the site just
right.
because they're global.
Right.
There are always exceptions to that, but that's sort of the benefit of the front end, and what makes it a little easier is that it's so much of it ends up being having a global impact.
Right.
But I do like to have those initial before statistics.
Right.
And so once we know the pages that Leah is looking at from a backend perspective, I test those same pages in a few different performance tests that I like. The ones I always use are Google PageSpeed, Pingdom, Web Page Test, and GT Metrics. I've used YSlow in the past, but honestly, everything I get from Web Page Test is almost exactly what I get from YSlow. So there's just, I haven't seen a value to do both. Saves yourself, you know, 5 minutes per page for testing. But that said, they all do provide pretty similar information, page load time, page size, requests. A couple things about what I like is that page speed, I like how it runs tests for mobile and desktop, so you can get scores in context.
Right.
You know, and that's really good for, you know, discussing these numbers with the client, you know, emphasizing that you're not seeing it on your computer, but look at this test, we're seeing problems in mobile. And it sort of extrapolates some of the things that would affect mobile more than it would desktop.
Absolutely.
I also think Google PageSpeed connects with clients because Google has name recognition for them.
Absolutely.
And importance in their minds.
Mm-hmm.
While Pingdom doesn't mean much to anybody else, Web Page Test doesn't mean much to our clients. And so I typically talk about Google PageSpeed with the client because
right.
it's instant, oh, that's important to them. But it's not my only metric. Partly because Google PageSpeed, interestingly enough, penalizes you for not caching assets, including remote assets. but you can't cache remote assets because
including Google Analytics.
Exactly. So you get dinged by Google PageSpeed for using Google Analytics. But it's just the only way to not get that penalty is to not use remote assets and to cache every local hosted asset. And that's just, it's not possible for most business cases that are relying on Google Analytics or things like Typekit or other services like that. And that's why I like GT Metrics, because that service corrects for that. It doesn't ding you for remote asset caching, just local asset caching. The other reason why I have so many, so that's why I like Google PageSpeed and GT Metrics. They kind of give me one-to-one results, but GT Metrics corrects for what PageSpeed penalizes you for. But what I also like about Web Page Test and Pingdom that PageSpeed doesn't have is they give you a visual timeline of asset requests. So you see your time to first byte and then where all the other assets fall into place. So you can see right away if there's some tracking JavaScript code that's holding things up at a certain point. And I just find that really useful.
Absolutely. And I believe Web Page Test also even shows you a little bit of a video to show you, like, really as the things fall, you can actually visually see it happen.
Absolutely, yeah. So basically, all of those tests and the data that I get from them, I add to that spreadsheet that Leia had started that has her back-end performance values. Mm-hmm. And again, that sort of is our before picture that we rely on to inform the client about what we're going to do and have a comparison point for how much we improved things.
Yes, absolutely. So once we have a baseline, we then have to move into the actual work. But let's talk first about our client, let's call it client A, who we've been working with for almost 5 years. Mm-hmm. That was the site that we inherited to provide EE, you know, development.
Bolt-on Franken-site.
Yeah. So over the years, we now provide support for everything, not just tiny EE dev here, as well as design, et cetera, and so forth. But that also means we're supporting a front end that we didn't build, which is a good seg to talk about their front end related performance challenges. So why don't you talk about that a bit,
Em? Yeah. So, you know, this happens whenever you inherit a site, you know, you're dealing with someone else's code. This particular site is using a Bootstrap foundation, which if anyone knows me, knows that I don't use frameworks. And I think some of the challenges I encountered that are related to Bootstrap just sort of underscored for me that I'm still making the right decision by not using that for production work. Mm-hmm. But anyways, the specific things I found with this client A, the first thing, front end, images. In fact, for both of our clients, images were and frankly still are an issue. The file sizes are simply too big. The solution is part client education, which we're just kind of constantly reminding them of, that you have to start with a well-optimized image. It doesn't need to be bigger, you know, than it's going to display. Like, you know, those things just aren't necessary. But also part of it is modifying content management system workflows to force things like file size limitations, image resizing, things like that. The other front-end issue I found that was the most problematic after images, because frankly, images was number one across the board because they're just big files. So that was always what was showing up. But the other thing that is a problem on this client site, and we haven't actually addressed it for this client A, is that they have a lot of those marketing tracking scripts. Not only are these an additional request on the page, but most, if not all of them, are actually redirects. And so with Pingdom, that's almost a double penalty. You're getting penalized for the request and then penalized that it's a redirect. The solution for this is really to bring it to the client's attention and have them review what's there and find out if everything is still needed and get rid of what isn't. Because frankly, there's some scripts on the site that were there 5 years ago with staff that's no longer there. And I don't think those campaigns are still running. And so it needs to be something that has to be looked at. We can't decide that, but we can give them a list of what we're seeing and have them say whether they can remove it or not.
Right.
And if they can't remove it, then it's really a discussion about making sure the client understands that not removing it does place a limitation on our ability to make performance improvements.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's just the bottom line. If they can't get rid of it, then they have to understand the impact of it.
That's just the reality of bolt-on sites. Like when you have so many developers, they just keep adding a bunch of things. And 404s, they're a nuisance. They're a nuisance. They really do affect performance.
Yep. Another thing that was high on this client's list of front-end issues were render blocking scripts. These are scripts and even sometimes CSS that literally block the page rendering until the files load. And it's typically because these files are in the document head. There can be other reasons, but that's the most common reason why it's a problem. And the solution is to move them out of the head if you can. You can't always. Another solution may be to call them asynchronously. There's an async parameter for a JavaScript tag so that it tells the browser to call it, you know, don't wait for it to load everything else. But sometimes that'll break the functionality on your site. So it's really a go through, see which ones you can move, see what breaks. If you can't move it, see if you can put async on it. See if anything breaks. And then if something's still breaking, it stays in the head. And you simply accept that that's what has to happen. Because it's rare that the client will have the budget for you to then figure out a JavaScript solution where you don't have to call the JavaScript in the head when you're dealing with performance. Because it can become a rabbit hole and you have to know when to stop. Unless you want to go bankrupt as an agency. You could certainly do that. Another thing that I spotted on this site was too many requests, too many JavaScript calls, too many CSS calls. And in fact, from what I can gather, not being someone who uses Bootstrap, but so much of this was tied to the Bootstrap framework and wanting to pull the modules from the framework and calling every JavaScript and CSS for a module independently. And it just was a huge mess. And it also slows things down. And so really the solution for that is you combine your scripts and your CSS files where you can. And if you're using a compiler or a preprocessor, or even like Dan Teo talked about with his build automation tools, that can just happen for you without you doing anything. You can work with your independent source files, but then they're all compiled into one, which is just, you know, one request. So the challenge, though, with that is kind of like the challenge I was talking about moving render blocking scripts out of the head. Sometimes you just can't. For example, with this client, they have a homepage slideshow, and it's very bulky in terms of the assets that it's relying on. And I know that I use something that's a lot leaner that we could rely on and wanted to replace it. Unfortunately, removing the original slideshow stuff, because it was so dependent on other modules tied to Bootstrap, caused a cascade of other issues that we couldn't address within the budget. And so we kept the slideshow as it was and informed the client of why and said, we'd love to replace this, but it's going to take a much bigger effort than you were planning for right now. And I think that's the hard part of this work, is that you're finding problems and not all of your solutions are easy and quick and cheap.
Yeah. And at the same time, too, like also keeping in mind, like, is there a future, like a bigger scale redesign in the future? And would the budget be better served to be saved for that as opposed to fixing this one particular issue? I don't know if that's going to bring the money in or further their brand or anything like that. So those are always the types of conversations you have with your client.
The last two things weren't biggies, but they're pretty much any site can benefit from them.
Absolutely.
First of which is gzipping, which is essentially compressing your local assets where you can. For us on this particular client, that's just managed in their htaccess file. For our other client, client B, they're the ones who are on the IIS PHP sort of thing. It was a little bit more work, but we collaborated with their IT guy, and essentially the same compression was able to be specified in the application host config file. And then the last thing that's I noted that it was an issue on this client A site was that you see in the performance test was recommending to serve your images from a content delivery network. And the solution is to move stuff to a CDN. The challenge, and this is true for both of our clients, is that this is additional cost that neither one of them were interested in incurring. And so it's one of those things that we noticed, but we didn't address.
Yeah. And for the other client I want to mention, our client B, we actually tested implementing that the client, not just for, not necessarily for the ongoing costs, but remember how earlier in the show we were talking about administrative costs, like the staff costs. So when we were testing the CDN for client B, it saved some time, but it wasn't dramatic enough that the increase in administrative overhead in terms of having to train them on making sure that they use this new add-on that hooks up to Amazon S3, that hooks up to CloudFront, that does this, that, or the other. And if they're always ongoing changing, do they understand that they have to rename files so the cache breaks and all, you know, on and on. Because you have, there's a lot of things that you have to discuss with your client about cache breaking, about uploads, where it's going. And then you have to, especially for a large organization, predict the cost of these items, and depending on what the system is, whether it's like Amazon or some like other thing like Cloudflare or whatever, some are just ongoing monthly costs with like a max cap, and the other ones are per use, and that's hard to predict too. And so with all of those particular headaches, we were like, well, we can put this in here, but we personally think that this is actually going to add administrative overhead to your staff. And based on the speed test we did when we did add a temporary CDN to just see how the page loaded, the increase in page load wasn't significant enough for me to say, like, yeah, this is, we need to have this.
Just, it wasn't worth just the trade-off.
Yeah, exactly. It was a, you know, cost-benefit analysis, essentially.
Right. Well, okay, so that was all of the front-end stuff for that client A, the add-on Frankensight.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk about the monitoring that we're doing using New Relic to keep an eye on EE and how we're resolving the EE back-end issues we find?
So earlier in the show, we were talking about the importance of stability and speed. So we established earlier that a lot of issues with site performances are related to all the pillars of the site. So for our monitored client A, we wanted to prevent emergencies by keeping on top of any issues that could come up before they even occur, before there's even a big traffic push. And also, as our last episode on quality assurance pointed out, a fix can create or uncover a new host of issues. So through monitoring, we try to make sure that site is as stable as it can be, just being on top of things.
And are you checking every day?
No. Basically, if once the site is stable, when it was the emergency situation, I think we were checking it essentially like once a day to see what's going on. And also because each fix, we wanted to see whether it continued, etc. But like once the site stabilized, now that this particular client, we're just checking it once a week.
Okay.
Yeah. And as some marketing campaign comes on. So usually once a week to just do an overall view, kind of a temperature check. And then if the client says, okay, on this day, this is going to happen, then I check what happens, what it looks like before and what it looks like after, and then a few hours after. Because sometimes you don't notice the mistakes until more data is on New Relic.
Right. You know, it just occurs to me as well, this is less about performance and more about, I guess, a workflow. But anytime we release a new change on the live site, you check New Relic after that just to make sure.
Right.
You know, something that, you know, they wanted a new landing page feature and we changed the category assignments or something like that in EE. So you're also checking then.
Right. To just give you like a real world example why that's important is sometimes we push something and we upload the dev HT access, which has certain things hidden. And then there's the live HT access where those things need to be unhidden. And we had overwritten the wrong thing. So the site was working, but then New Relic was like showing like something is slow. Something is going weird. And because we checked right after was how we were able to figure out like, oh, when we were doing the switcheroo, we shouldn't have overwritten the HT axis because they were separated. The templates, yes, but like the HT axis, we had to keep them separated because they had different hidden configurations depending on what the environment was. So that was kind of like a must for New Relic, essentially. And yeah, that's the magic of New Relic, really, is that it really shows you what happens within 5 minutes of the launch, too. So if you notice that it's slower post-launch, that's like, well, that's weird. That shouldn't have happened. So it allows you to dive deeper sooner than your client giving you a phone call saying something is wrong.
Right. So that's how we're monitoring and kind of why.
Right.
So when you do spot an issue, how are we tackling these problems?
Well, first of all, clients have constraints,
right,
which include limited budgets or resources. In an ideal world, I'm sure every dev will be like, let's rebuild this from scratch using modern techniques, especially because some of the reasons why sites are slow, because how sites were built 5 years ago are different than they are now. And on top of that, with client A, you have multiple vendors going through your site. It's filled with new things that are just simply bolted on versus, you know, thoughtfully considered, just so a page or initiative is pushed through. So for this particular client, per campaign basis one, the piece by piece one, because they're very constrained, we've just done a lot of caching. It's a Band-Aid solution, but it's a good Band-Aid solution.
We'll talk about that because I know that we're not just doing one type of caching. We've got really custom granular caching going on.
Right. Like, and it's changed over time. Like, for example, last year when we started doing some emergency work and things like that, we just did caching of the navigation items. For example, the footer and the main navigation, because they were all dynamically being generated. So that was step one. And that helped a lot because navigation and footer is in every single page. But as this client has matured and their needs have increased, especially, you know, earlier in the show, we were talking about how, okay, 2 times visits versus 10 times versus 20 times the visits are different. So last year, just caching the navigation and few elements per page was enough. But this year, they were like 10 times the speed, and it was, again, they were having issues with the site, not
they had
doing
just
very
more
well.
Aggressive marketing this year.
Way more promos, all that fun stuff. And the fixes that we had last year were for the caching stuff, the granular caching, was no longer enough. So with that particular client, we started figuring out how which pages needed whole page caching. That means the entire page needed to be cached now. And then the next step after that, which can be static cached. So that's the best part. Again, in an ideal world, all pages are static. That means it's no longer touching the database. It's just literally a flat file. Like once it's been generated, so the caveat is the page needs to be generated first and foremost. So you still have like the initial speed hit, but you can address that with workflow issues with your client, that they should be the ones that visits the page first after edits have been made. But as I mentioned, that's a workflow issue. Right. And so not all pages need to be static cached. So we had to identify the most important pages that needed to be static cached and the other pages that just needs whole page caching and just needs to ping the database that one time. And because the whole page is cached, it's not doing multiple queries for that page anymore. It's doing the one query to just pull that one page. So for that particular client, that really helped the speed, especially because they have a constrained budget and they have constrained resources. Ideally, as I mentioned, it would have been great to rebuild more of the site so that before caching, the site itself is already performing well. But if you have limited constraints, first and foremost, cache your page.
Yeah. Well, I think that gives a really perfect segue to talk about client B, where we were, like I said, having a really dedicated performance project and could actually rebuild.
Right, exactly.
And I think we talked about it earlier. The whole thing started was their homepage was super slow.
Right. And because we weren't doing any emergency situations, we were able to do a bit of a major rebuild for critical parts of their site and caching. So that's really the ideal, is being able to rebuild things based on modern techniques and new features on an upgraded site, et cetera, plus caching that so that regardless whether a page is cached or a template is cached, it's going to be fast, and it's going to be even faster if it is cached. Mm-hmm. So that is ideal. But, you know, kind of like I mentioned with client A, it's about prioritizing everyone's expectations
right.
about administrative bandwidth and what content needs to be shown.
Right. Well, let's talk then a little bit about this client B and how we tackled it, because it was a lot more planned in the sense of it's not ongoing and responding to things we see, is that we had a defined beginning, a number of pages to tackle, and then a defined end. So right. just as with client A, we did take a look at the front end. And when we had our initial discussion with this client about their homepage, their IT guy was like, I'm sure it's JavaScript. I'm sure there's some, and I was agreeing with him. I was like, I'm sure that this is something tied to the front end that, right. you know, we can take a look at. Lo and behold, after all of the tests that we ran it through, front end was really not that bad.
No.
That probably, if left alone, the front end probably wouldn't cause any problems. It was mostly EE, which I'll have you talk about. I will just mention the few front-end issues that we did find were the same ones that we noticed in client A. Again, right. this is the stuff that really does seem to be common. Images were a problem. Gzipping, having to add that. Moving render blocking scripts out of the head where we could, and reducing external requests. And in fact, this client was able to remove some of those tracking scripts that they weren't using anymore, which also made a big difference. But front end was, we could have ignored front end and still had great results with this project because so much of it was tied to EE.
Right.
So Leah, why don't you talk a little bit about the overwhelming EE issues that you saw with this particular client B build?
Right. So it's all embeds.
Yeah.
Like if this entire show could be summarized in one sentence, don't use embeds unless you need them. Mm-hmm. Embed tags aren't evil, okay? They are necessary for certain uses, mm-hmm. but excessive use of the embed tag is just an awful way to build a site for performance issues. That being said, that was what we used to do, you know, 5 years ago to make a site a lot more dry. Do not repeat yourself because then you can segment certain pieces of code and it's a lot more efficient. But what's efficient for a developer isn't necessarily efficient for the site to build. And
good
again,
point.
Maybe back then they didn't have as much traffic, so there
well,
weren't as
much issue. 5 years ago, they probably weren't as concerned about mobile. 5 years ago, you know,
yes,
people's
exactly.
expectations were so different as users.
Right. And the reason why an embed is an issue is that, you know, we mentioned the queries. Each embed can have multiple queries because it's essentially like inserting another template within a template within a template. And then so it's
inception.
Kind of, yeah, exactly. It's literally inception. So for example, one page had 14 embeds and none was necessary. Like once we reviewed it, it was like zero. None of this needed to be an embed. It didn't need the features that an embed had. So trying to figure out how we can replace that with more elegant solutions, usually just moving them to low variables or just copy pasting it directly into the template was a better solution already.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of the other templates were using PHP to output.
Mm-hmm.
Now, earlier in the show, you mentioned, you know, upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
Upgrading to the latest version often solves a lot of problems because if you're using a five-year-old system, there's new things that you can do now that you weren't able to do before. So certain templates probably had custom PHP because those add-ons didn't exist. That functionality didn't exist 5 years ago, so they had to custom code it. But that makes an issue when rendering a page. So we tried to remove as much custom PHP as possible that was not necessary. And then we used native functionality. It was a lot more efficient. That saved a lot of time. lack of proper caching in general. There was no caching really in the page. There was like, they turned on the default template caching for 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. That really isn't that efficient in regards to it. There's like new ways to do caching. Specifically, we use Stash on both our clients to good use. I do know that CE Cache is really popular as well, but the experience we've had with Stash has been fantastic with both clients.
I think that's because of Mustache, right?
Right. So Mustache is the commercial add-on to Stash. So Stash itself is the one that caches the pages and actually does the bulk of the work. And Mustache is the administrative add-on that allows you to do automatic clearing based on actions, which is really fantastic for admins and a clear way to show what has been cached, like whether a page has been cached or whether just a part of the page has been cached. And then you can, instead of clearing the entire cache, you can granularly delete, say, a page cache or just the nav or this or that or the other. And then you can set up rules where, well, if we update this entry, then this page cache will completely be cleared or deleted, or a cascade of several pages will be deleted because this module affects all these pages. Mm-hmm. So Mustache is really useful for that.
And specifically for the client. I mean, it's useful,
yes,
for you and me, but
right,
because performance is so critical to both of these projects and the client is on board with that, you are introducing new things to their workflow.
Absolutely.
And that first and foremost one is having to understand what caching is and how to clear it. And having this Mustache dashboard in Expression Engine gives them a view. You know,
right,
we give them training and we give them documentation, but they also have this control panel view that makes it pretty clear what's been cached, how you could clear a given cache, et cetera.
Right. And you can drill down to even see what's inside that cache template,
mm-hmm,
to, you know, if you're troubleshooting and trying to figure out what's going on here, if that needs to be deleted, et cetera, and so forth. Like Stash in and of itself, again, is by itself is great. But unless you're someone like me and Emily, like before both clients had the budget to really tackle caching properly, I would go into SQL Pro, go into their actual database, find the Stash table, find the row, and manually delete it so I wouldn't clear the entire cache.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty freaking technical to understand exactly how to do that without bringing the entire site down.
Right.
Right. So investing in Mustache is, I think, a must if you decide to use Stash as your caching tool. And I will just also plug Mark Croxton, fantastic developer,
mm-hmm,
great response time to any questions, et cetera, and so forth.
Yeah, good guy.
Yeah. And then finally, in terms of other EE stuff, so we talked about embeds, we talked about PHP, and we talked about lack of proper caching, resource-intensive add-ons.
Yeah.
So that was a major issue. Try to build your site as natively as possible. Add-ons can add so many more queries that aren't even necessary, mm-hmm, to every page, even if it isn't being called. That's the, mm-hmm, crazy thing, right?
Yeah, what is
better
the
workflow?
One? Better workflow.
Yeah.
We're not even using it on some pages, but it's still being called.
Right, right. Yeah, so for example, with better workflow, you can set it up so that it only works for specific channels, but regardless of what page you're viewing, it will load better workflow. It will load it. Another thing that was intensive, and I guess this is the discussion you have with a client, it's like in terms of workflow, mm-hmm, they had CE image installed because they wanted to create multiple images on the fly so they can have like responsive hero images on all pages just created as the page loads.
Mm-hmm.
As the page loads. So what that means is that client uploads this giant 2,000 pixel image, and then the first time this hero image generates the multiple images for responsive devices is when a visitor slash user slash your client slash customer visits the page.
It's insane.
And then so the database needs to be called. Then the FTP slash server has to talk and those images needed to be generated. Well, in concept, it's great. Like, wow. So then the client doesn't have to manually create these multiple images. All these images are on the fly, but it's so resource intensive to the database and server. and also largely unnecessary now because natively EE can create multiple images on the upload side as opposed to the page load side. So if you upload something using the file manager in EE or just like a file field, you can set it up so that it can also generate different hero sizes once you've uploaded it. And then through the template, you just mention, okay, if using your queries or whatever, if it's this size, serve the smaller image or serve this bigger image, etc. So getting rid of that and using the native functionality really, really helped.
So we're already at almost at the hour mark. I do want you to talk a little bit about actually what we did. So you found out what the main EE issues are. So let's talk a little bit about how we tackled them. And I think the first thing to mention is planning it, prioritizing all of this stuff. So all the front end and all the EE, how do you decide what happens when and what's most important?
Right. So I feel like the first thing is narrowing down the issues that's page specific and what's global. Like what's something that only that page is dealing with and what can be dealt with that has a bigger impact. And then once we narrow down those particular workflow issues over like the multiple things, page specific and global, you figure out which one's the easiest to be hammered out and implement them right away. So the stuff that like, okay, so we can just delete this, fine, delete it, right? And then what affects the database is really the most important thing. So like once you've had that list of pages and like say global elements like navigation that you list that you're looking for, if you're making a change, does that need version control? Does that need some sort of content redundancy on the client's part and discussion over where handovers happen, right?
Yeah, in fact, I think that was a big part of this project that was really successful because we prioritized the changes we were going to make to tackle all the ones that we could do locally without them having to put a content hold on their live system or doing content redundancy procedures, you know, where they're tracking content live that they can later enter into the new development system. So we tackled a bunch of stuff before we even had to ask them to do that, which is good because their perception of their inconvenience was smaller than if we were like, you know what, this is going to take us a month. You got to be out of your system for a month. That's, you know, unreasonable.
It was important to us that we prioritized what we could tackle without any issue for them. And then we listed off the order of all the EE improvements from essentially the easiest, just like the stuff that we said, like what can we tackle right away and delete? And then we tried to figure out, okay, so what's the easiest? Optimizing queries, for example, like adding dynamic no or the entry ID to a single entry page. That's very simple. That's just doing that to all the affected templates. And then we go down the list to more all-encompassing changes like replacing the embeds with alternatives or copy-pasting the code. And then even bigger changes. So with embeds being the old school way of EE development, we still wanted to make things dry. Because, okay, it's easy to copy-paste the old template code just into the template, but that is hard to maintain for anybody. So in the newer versions of EE, EE layouts exist. So that's a major way of making code snippets way more efficient without having to use embeds anymore. So we use the mix of EE layouts and low variables to replace all the previous embeds. So all the code snippets were still quite maintainable, but it's a lot more efficient. And then finally, we put together a caching plan that would allow the most flexibility for admins while keeping the site as fast and nimble as possible.
I think what's just really interesting is that we're essentially able to achieve the same goals for both of these clients because we've made significant improvements in their page speeds, but totally different approaches.
Right, absolutely.
I mean, not just in the fixes, but having a dedicated project was really fun because it's so controlled, but it's also really fun to have to anticipate what's going to happen this week because there's a new campaign.
Right. And the thing about speed and performance and testing is that there's very clear before and afters.
Yes. I think that's the part we haven't quite mentioned yet, and I want to make sure we do before we finish up. for this particular client that Leia was describing, this client B, you know, once we finished all the changes and we then ran all the pages through all of the same performance tests in the beginning and gathered the numbers for an after picture. And then we compiled a really detailed report that used charts and graphs to really show the improvement in page speed and other benchmarks. And no joke, what did he say? I'm beyond thrilled like that.
Well, actually what made me laugh is he said they started to jump around. I was like, that is the most satisfying response from a client ever.
And so it's worth in your projects to factor in this extra time to do this post-analysis Absolutely. And testing, because it really underscores the value you brought to the project.
Absolutely.
And with this project, we really only tackled a handful of key templates on their site. It affected several hundred pages on their site, but there are still other pages that should be looked at. And so, you know, that before and after analysis also serves as quote unquote ammunition for the IT director to go ask for budget spend next year. So there's value in that. A budget spend that they will hopefully spend with us. It's a sales tool.
Because vagueness doesn't help the sales process or client satisfaction after the project is done. So making sure you set clear parameters too of what you're testing and what the expectations are after the fixes are done is really important. That's why a before and after is super important. Something that we also did was we kind of undersold what the after might be as well.
Yes.
For one, to cover our ass. And for the other, if we go above and beyond that, you get that thrilled reaction from your client. Now, the other thing too is like whenever you do before and after, you really, and this is like, you know, you as a professional have to listen to a client's needs, and that means the entire team. So when you are setting these parameters and setting these expectations, sometimes somebody in the team doesn't think a particular page or a particular optimization wasn't even all that important. But I'm thinking about this particular client, when we showed them the after, the team's director specifically called out the page that was dismissed earlier. I was like, because everyone was so focused on the homepage, right?
Yep.
And that's important, obviously. But because we listened to the client and we took into account the entire team's feedback, we really put in a lot of effort on all the pages. And we didn't dismiss any of the ones as less important than the other. Like we gave it the same amount of effort, the homepage, the same amount of effort as the other pages as well. And then that gave an overall improvement throughout the entire site.
So as we wrap up, Leia, what are your lessons learned about Expression Engine and performance that you think everyone should know?
So really, be careful with your queries and how you build your site in the first place. I feel like this is almost Expression Engine 101. Use native EU functionality, because there's a lot of built-in features and sometimes add-ons may seem convenient, but it can add a lot to the load time. Caching is a great band-aid solution that you should use, but you shouldn't stop there. The site itself should be built properly, and anything else you do makes it even better as opposed to a fix. And there are situations where a page can't be cached, like if you've got login situations, right? Like if you've got membership stuff or if you've got search, anything that needs to be dynamic. So an entire page can't be cached or not cached completely. So if you build the rest of the page well, then the page and the site overall will be faster. So yeah, so I really want to emphasize that, because I'm like, yeah, just cache the page. Well, depending on your site, you can't, you might not be allowed to. Might not be able to because of those dynamic elements. Yeah. So Emily, we spoke a lot about EE. What are your final front-end lessons?
Well, interestingly enough, it just goes back to EE. Oh. Like I said earlier, don't assume it's all front-end.
Right.
Within our industry, you really do see all of the talk about performance very focused on the front-end. And as I described, there's a lot you can do to improve. And in bonus, it most of the time happens globally. But like we saw with our client B, the front end was really negligible compared to the impact the CMS had. And in though we focused on two of our EE clients in this episode, this is not an EE issue. This is a CMS issue. CMSs that rely on a database. As Leia was describing, every time you're querying the database, that's a back and forth conversation that slows things down. WordPress, themes and plugins can severely compromise speed. Drupal is actually known to not be performance friendly and requires a lot of customization to get things speedy. And same with Joomla. So this is one of those things that if you're building sites on any CMS and your client cares about performance, and nowadays I think you're going to start seeing this, you need to know how to make your CMS output as efficiently as possible. Right. And if you don't want to deal with that, then you need to work with a flat file solution like Kirby or Statamic or something. Without a database, you're going to have far fewer bottlenecks.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did have a couple sort of other thoughts that aren't really EE or front end that I did want to mention before we finish up. And I think the first one is that I don't believe perfection is possible with this kind of work. Front end, there are business or display reasons why you have a render blocking script in the head, and that's, or a tracking script has to be in place. So those are going to be penalized in a test, but you have to have them. From a bigger, you know, including EE perspective, there are budget and timing reasons why something can't be addressed. And so a lot of performance isn't just production work. It's also focusing on educating the client about why you can or cannot address something, and also having the experience to know when it's okay that you failed a test, kind of like Lewis was talking about in our quality assurance episode. Sometimes failing a test is just fine. You know the client, the budget, and the environment, and so you have to balance your performance test results with the reality.
Yeah, absolutely. I just also wanted to point out with the EE backend in terms of perspective about budget and timing reasons, there is administrative reasons. Part of the reason why a page or entry might be slow is because a client really demands and needs to have all this customization. Mm-hmm. It needs to have all those fields. So, well, if that's the reality, that's just going to take time, right? So that's hard to change unless they really decide I'm not going to customize as much.
Well, I think that is a good place to start. It's a pretty deep topic, and there's a lot you can do to make the process smoother and make client collaboration better. But these are the basics that we've learned and will hopefully, you know, help anyone else who's working with a performance project, you know, especially EE, but I really do think all of these lessons can be applied to any CMS.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, and we didn't cover enough, but...
No, I mean, we totally have skipped over huge chunks of notes.
Yeah, absolutely. But we should end now with our rapid fire 10 questions. But since both Em and I have answered our set of questions for this year, we're going to answer a few questions that didn't make the cut this year. And who knows, maybe they'll be on next year's list. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. What is one of your pet peeves?
Okay. I have this one at the tip of my tongue because I think it every morning on my walks. Dog owners who don't leash their dogs in community spaces. I cannot stand it. And I say something about it every time.
Yeah, that's not cool. I mean, like, you can think that your dog is perfectly fine, but that they're still an animal. And I love animals and I love dogs. Leash your pets, please.
There are so many reasons for it. I won't even go into them all, but there are so many reasons for it. And it drives me insane every morning. How about you? What's one of your pet peeves?
People who post weird memes on Facebook that's clearly bunk. Like, what is this holistic kind of weirdness that you're just, come on, no. No. Please, no.
All right. How about how many stupid domains do you own?
I don't really own that many stupid domains. I think at one point I had like a ton of different like self-branding ones. And then afterwards I feel like it's just down to leoleo.net.
Yeah, yeah, same here. I think in my early to mid 30s, I was like collecting domain names. And every time Jason and I would have some internal joke, we're like, that's a great domain name. Let's buy it. Absolutely ridiculous. But I've pared it down to just business related domains.
Okay. So are you into comics?
Eh.
All right. So then do you have any skin in the game for Marvel versus DC?
Only from the movies. And I don't know if that's a fair response to true comic lovers, but I prefer Marvel. But it's because the movies for DC have really disappointed me.
Yeah, ditto. I feel like...
Ben Affleck was a bad decision.
Affleck? No. Yeah. Yeah, for me, I feel like... I mean, I'm into comics, but I don't know if I want to say like, oh, I prefer one versus the other, because both have had like good and bad. Like I prefer the Nolanverse of Batman DC kind of thing in the movies, but I used to love, you know, the X-Men and all those kind of things, which I believe is Marvel, although that's owned by...
So you're on the fence.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Marvel's more fun, especially like in the movies and things like that, but... Meh.
Yeah, I think DC Comics has that history of tackling social issues.
Right. Well, Marvel too, like except like through the mutants and, you know, Spider-Man and all those kind of things. But I feel like I'm getting, I used to love them, but like there's just so much that you're just kind of getting tired. Yeah.
Yeah. Exhaustion. All right. Well, let's see if you're on the fence about this one. Hot dogs or hamburgers?
Hamburgers.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love a good hot dog, but I will never pass up a hamburger.
Yeah, like in Seattle, hamburgers. Like, dude, hamburgers so good here. Plug to 8 Ounce. That's my favorite burger place in Seattle. So great.
We don't have a good burger joint here. I know. Well, it's Albuquerque. We don't have much good food here. All right. What's your favorite season?
Autumn. Because it's kind of like my birthday season, because I was born in September, so that's part of it. But the other part is it's like I love the turning colors, and I love that it's warm and starting to get cool, but it's not too warm and not too cold. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on all of that. I love the smell in the air. And here in Albuquerque, anyone who's from New Mexico knows what I'm talking about. Right about now, there's a Christmas in the mornings. And then you smell the smell of roasting chili, because that's all starting right now. All right, last question. I think this one's kind of hard, and I don't even know what my answer is. But how about you? What's the best piece of professional advice you've received?
Best piece of professional advice. Oh, gosh, I feel this is so, so hard, because I don't know. Like, it feels like it's an overall thing that I've heard from a lot of people versus, like, one specific person said, you know, do this. Is to kind of... really plan for your success, if that makes any sense, because, you know, thinking about just my career and all those kind of things, when there's momentum, like sometimes I've dropped the ball, you know what I mean? And now, like, especially we're thinking about our own business and like how we're dealing with things, it's kind of like, how do I pick up that momentum again? Right. So I feel like if you are on a high, just keep pushing. Don't stop because you're on a high. You have to keep hustling.
Right.
How about you? What's your best piece of professional advice?
I don't know who told me this. It's probably like you, something I've just heard through the years, but it's been one of those things that's really helped me in running this business is focus on yourself, run your own race.
Right.
It does not matter what someone else is
doing. Absolutely.
You know, it doesn't matter if you think they're great. They're not you. And if you are worried about trying to do what they're doing or emulate it in some way, you're missing out on figuring out what you do that's unique. Yeah. And yeah, so whenever I start getting worried because I see someone's doing well and I'm comparing Bright Umbrella to where they are and I start getting bummed out, I just stop and say, well, wait, compare me to where I was 3 years ago.
Right.
You know, 5 years ago. Compare me to me.
Yeah, so,
that's it.
Fantastic advice, I think.
And that brings us to the end of today's episode. If you want to know more about performance, be sure to check out our show notes. We'll have some links in there, as well as a blog post we recently wrote about how performance affects marketing campaigns. And so there should be good resources
Absolutely.
For you.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency obsessed with happy clients. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsor. Thank you, Backup Pro.
We'd also like to thank our partners, Arcus Tech and Devotee.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at ControlClickCast or visit our website, ControlClickCast.com. And if you like this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both. And if you really like this episode, consider donating to the show. Links are in our show notes and on our site.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when we'll talk to Jay Cornelius about discovery-only projects. Be sure to check out our schedule on controlclickcast.com/schedule for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.